This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Today we've got a fantastic show lined up for you. We've got Dr. Simon Fox, who's been in leadership for many years and has been pivotal in rolling out the T-Levels program. And he's going to talk to us about that middle ground we're all wondering about. What's happening with those students?
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
You are listening to Teachers Talk Radio News, and here is a roundup of some of the main stories over the past 7 days. On the eve of the National Education Unions Conference, which runs in Bournemouth from the 3rd to the 6th of April, it looks increasingly as though a ballot on strike action will be taken. An indicative ballot, in which over half the members of the union participated, showed 9 in 10 in favour of a ballot on strike action. Daniel Kabedi, General Secretary of the union, indicated that if conference votes in favour of strike action, it will be serving notice to this government and future governments rather than ensuring that strikes did happen. However, he also outlined his belief in the gravity of the current crisis facing education in an interview with Radio 4's Today programme.
There is a mood of desperation, if we're being honest. The profession is very much on its knees. Morale is at an all-time low. And of course, we can see that in the crisis in recruitment and retention. 9% of the teaching profession left the profession last year prior to retirement. The government is continually missing its recruitment targets for new teachers. We missed it by 50% for secondary teachers this year. Quite simply, if we continue on this direction of travel, education will grind to a halt.
Other teachers' unions, including the NASUWT, have indicated they will not be holding a ballot on strike action. However, Patrick Roach, General Secretary of the NASUWT, has called for the replacement of the School Teachers' Pay Review Body, or the Independent Pay Review Body as it is known, with a Teachers' Pay Commission, stating that the current pay review body is not independent, since its remit is set by the government and its members chosen by the government. And this year, the pay review body has been told by the government that it must set a pay level lower than last year and focus on shortage subjects. In other news, this week Amanda Spielman gave her first interview since leaving as head of Ofsted. On the Difficult Women podcast, she was asked by interviewer Rachel Johnson, while reflecting on her career, about the death of Ruth Perry. Much loved and dedicated head teacher Ruth Perry had committed suicide after an Ofsted inspection, which the coroner had characterised as brutal and insensitive. Spielman said that the inspection had been carried out exactly as it should be. There was nothing wrong with the inspection, but, she noted sadly, it is at times difficult to tell people tough messages. And she compared the Ofsted process with its single word, judgments, as being similar to a driving test, which no one likes to fail. This week, the website TeacherTap, which regularly carries out surveys into teachers' attitudes and opinions, surveyed teachers' reaction to the Dame Sarah Kahn report into Threats to Public Cohesion, in which she'd suggested the possibility of exclusion zones around schools of 150 metres. This came in reaction to groups of parents demonstrating outside schools in reaction to what they perceived as insults to religion among the staff. 58% of teachers surveyed thought this was a good idea. 48%, though, said yes, but the exclusion zones should not exclude teachers' unions or striking teachers. In another Teacher Tap survey this week, the website reported that over 20% of teachers had seen evidence of cheating using artificial intelligence. This was up from 6% last year. Teachers' views were also surveyed in an NASUWT poll that was reported in the Independent newspaper. In a survey of thousands of teachers, 9 out of 10 stated that stress and workload had had an adverse effect on their mental health, and 12% said they used alcohol to cope. In some powerful interviews, other teachers described vomiting before work and having cried at work in reaction to student behaviour and stress. This follows the widely reported news item on the BBC, which said that 1 in 5 teachers in England had been hit by a pupil in the previous year, and teachers reporting that spitting, swearing, and chair throwing were happening often. This week, the website Education Uncovered, led by the investigative reporter Warwick Mansell, reported the story of Sir Paul Marshall, chair of the Ark Schools Academy Trust. Sir Paul, multi-millionaire hedge fund manager and co-owner of GB News, was reported by the organisation Hope Not Hate, which confronts hate speech in the media, as having retweeted, either casually or thoughtfully, a number of the most extreme Islamophobic and homophobic tweets. Union members at ARC Schools have called for him to resign, as no longer fit and proper to be associated with education. And Labour MP Sam Terry has urged the ARC Trust to sever links with Sir Paul. So far, they are standing by him. And finally, in a widely reported story which appeared in The Guardian and on the BBC and in the Independent newspaper, parents at a Boyne primary school in Aberdeenshire were furious after the photographer, Tempest Photography, issued 2 sets of photographs of the children. One where the pupils with additional needs had been removed. Parents received an apology from the local council, which said the decision had not been taken by the school and the link to the photographs had been removed. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio news for this week. You can find archived interviews of Daniel Kabidi, the General Secretary of the NEU, in-depth discussion and analysis of the role of Ofsted in many past Teachers Talk Radio programmes, as well as the weekly teacher review on Sunday mornings on YouTube. Thank you for listening.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining me again. Sabrina is on the show here today with Dr. Simon Fox, who's Deputy Principal and has been in leadership for over 15 years. We are going to be talking about A-levels, T-levels, the middle ground and everything around. So I'm going to hand over to Simon, who's going to tell us a little bit about how he's come here on this journey and what he's found along the way. Over to you, Simon.
Lovely. Thank you. And morning, everyone. And thank you, Sabrina, for the invite to come along and have a chat. And do intervene at any point if I start to kind of get away with myself, because I think this is a really, really massively important area that as a sector, generally as an education sector, but also as a post-16 sector, everyone should have a thought and an opinion about, and really get under the bonnet of why they have that opinion. And I suppose my journey is a kind of interesting one. My background, as you said, is education. I've been in it for quite a while, but started in schools. So interestingly for me, I came to post-16 6 years ago now, not knowing very much about the nitty-gritty of it, not really understanding how the sector worked, not understanding how brilliant it is to work in the sector, but also how frustrating in terms of some of the changes around regular and really impactful changes around funding and qualifications and the way the sector works. So it's kind of been a really interesting journey for me, because I guess I've overlapped with what is probably one of the bigger qualification changes that has happened in the last few years. So I kind of feel like I've grown up in post-16 with T-levels. It feels like my little sibling, like my baby brother or sister. And I'm kind of proud of it, but also it can be a bit annoying at times. And I think that's maybe how we all feel about T-levels. And I think, so that's been really interesting. And as a college, so I work at East Norfolk Sixth Form College, which is a sixth form college, it's classic sixth form college, 16 to 19, out in on the east coast of Norfolk, with a really, really diverse mixed intake of young people, huge socioeconomic disadvantage in the local area. So our learners come to us and we really want to make a difference to their lives and their experiences. And we think T-levels are part of that. You know, we've really embraced it. But I guess what we're concerned about and what is exercising us is how the full qualification landscape looks, how A-levels and T-levels work together and how they work with the new style of applied qualification, the AGQs that are going to come through to replace BTECs. And I guess
could you just explain what those two are, just for our listeners, in case you know, they're not familiar with all the kind of changes and the reforms?
Yeah, so I mean, A-levels, I guess we're all pretty familiar with them and what they are, and obviously they have been through their own reforms. And of course, the promise is that more is coming, which is always good. T-levels, and as you say, I guess they are out there, but not fully embraced by everybody yet for a whole variety of different reasons. So T-levels are what the government would refer to as their new kind of gold standard technical qualification, a real kind of approach to bringing in a cohesive, large qualification that is rigorous and demanding, has a real focus on work placement, and is effectively a student's program of study. That is the qualification they do. And they're available across a whole range of sectors. Some have been running for longer than others. They're equivalent effectively to 3 A-levels, and they are a 2-year program of study. So there's no kind of mid-flight exit point. There's no safe off-ramp, which we might come back to later, because that's one of the underlying problems with them potentially. And they kind of, I mean, the original intent of them as a qualification was really progression into sectors. It was never HE progression. And that's kind of morphed a little bit as well. And that might be something else we might return to. So you know, involved 250 employers in their design and development across all of the different sectors. It really focuses on this high quality work placement. Learners go into it, it's all about application of content, but the content is challenging. You know, it's kind of, you know, AS level for some of those courses. And also you've got in there, I guess, the rigorous demand of a whole variety of assessment types. So T-levels are, you know, a very different qualification to anything that exists at the moment. So the DfE is really setting those up as, you know, the alternative to A-levels, I think, in their initial kind of pitch and presentation of this, and they kind of held to that line. Really, they would like the majority of learners to do A-levels or T-levels. Mm-hmm. And of course, as you know, the implication and the impact of that has been a kind of a cut and burn approach to everything that sits in the middle. So yeah. All of the applied qualifications. And I think maybe, you know, again, it's very easy for this to become a polar conversation. You can love T-levels or you can hate them. You can agree with the government defunding BTECs or you can not. Actually, I think it's probably more nuanced than that. You know, as someone who's come into the sector later in career, I think it is a complicated landscape, and tidying it up and doing something to make it clearer for learners and their families and for employers is probably a good approach. Whether they're doing it in the right way is probably one of the things we can discuss today.
So what's your opinion on it? Let's hear your thoughts. And if we start from there, and tell us why you have those thoughts, what's kind of instigated these feelings?
So for me, it's all about young people. And, I think it's very difficult when you're setting policy and direction. If you're not someone who's worked in the sector or isn't working in the sector, you can come up with ideas that feel like they're doing the right thing. But until you see them in practice, it's hard to know whether they're going to work. A-levels, we're kind of used to that. We have a sense of the kind of learner that might be successful on them. We have a pretty good grasp of our entry criteria across the sector. You know, if you come in with this, we think you've got a chance of achieving because it tells us X, Y, and Z about your foundation knowledge. I think with T-levels, the reality is that they are also incredibly demanding, and therefore as a result we are setting similarly challenging entry criteria because we want learners to be successful. We don't want them to start on qualifications that they then can't achieve on as well as they should. And the other thing with them, and I think there's probably, if anyone out there is familiar with kind of more European vocational models, there's a lot that chimes against what maybe some government ministers or some civil servants have seen work well in Europe historically. So, you know, students at 15 or 16 want to commit to a particular sector. They, you know, they might have a large manufacturing factory in a sector in the town, and there is a group of young people that go to a vocational provision, and then they go into that employer. And I think that works potentially in some areas of the country, but not in others. And so we've also got this challenge of pitching T-levels that we think work for our local sectors because they're areas of growth, but that young people don't want to engage with for a whole variety of reasons at this time. So if you've got A-levels which have this academic rigor, if you've got T-levels which have got that and have also got this need for learners to commit to a route from quite an early stage, then suddenly you have this group in the middle that maybe aren't quite right and ready for A-levels and maybe aren't quite in the space where they want to commit to a T-level.
It's a big ask, isn't it? If you think about it, you know, they're committing, you know, without that midway drop off, like you said, to a programme of study for 2 years. At an age, really, do they know what they want to do for the rest of their lives? Maybe some of them, not so much. So is that going to impact your achievement, your data, you know, the longevity of that qualification?
And I think that's one of the interesting aspects of T-levels is it's a bit like industry, you know, it's like software industry. When you're developing a project, one route is to release minimal viable product and then let the sector, let the customer kind of drive the development of the product to find the bugs and help fix the bugs and say, well, here's what we want to, here's the next feature we want. And it feels a bit like they sort of did that with T-levels. They were like, we need to get this out because we think it's going to make a difference. So let's just put it out and see what happens. But then they haven't done the bit where they've then gone, well, let's listen to the feedback and tweak it enough. I think they might say they have done that a bit. And you know, I'd probably not to get into the nitty gritty of it, but there are some aspects of T-levels that have changed for the better since they were first introduced. So you can get partial recognition now if you've done the placement and either the core or the occupational specialism. So you will get UCAS points for that. They have tweaked, so you can do some remote placements for certain T-levels. They have made some adjustments around learners with special educational needs and how they undertake placements. So there is a an underlying kind of attempt to try and do some of those things. But for some of the really big hitting challenges, like this two-year commitment that doesn't offer an off-ramp for learners who might be coming from really disadvantaged backgrounds and really difficult starting points, they are kind of throwing everything, they're throwing the dice and they're putting everything on red or black and just hoping that it kind of comes up. And even the government's own review identified that, you know, the group most impacted by these changes are going to be those who are most disadvantaged. It's going to be learners with SEN. It's going to be learners from disadvantaged backgrounds. They're going to be the ones most impacted. But it doesn't feel like that's being recognised in the changes that are being made and thought about.
So in terms of that impact, what kind of aspects or factors are impacting these students beyond that kind of the run point that they can come out? Are there a multitude of different things that we can explore today?
I suppose it's when they've looked at the nature of the qualification and they've looked at the groups that can best cope with that type of qualification and the decision-making processes that you're making to embark on that, that's what kind of seems to come through. And I guess that, you know, you said yourself, that idea of knowing what you want to do at 15 or 16, if you've got, you know, and I know, you know, you've worked in areas with real disadvantage as well, understanding what learners are like at 16 is really critical to education. And they often are coming from really fractured backgrounds, really unsettled backgrounds. Often school hasn't gone well for them up to the point where they join us, or there's been real a real lack of consistency and a real lack of routine. So they're kind of making choices at a point where they're still really off kilter. And our job, and we, you know, having been 11 to 16 for years, I can say that it's really hard to prepare learners for post 16 because you don't really understand the sector. And also because of the way education works in terms of the accountability framework, the focus of pre 16 is level 2 outcomes, you know, because that's, and that's the key to the door, you know, learners need that. But it's not really about getting into a place where they're solidly, you know, able to transition into what are incredibly challenging qualifications. Then when you compare that to the current kind of applied qualification market, actually there you've got a richness. You know, learners can choose three different applied qualifications. They can say, I don't really know, you know, I'm not sure, but I want to try all of these and see what happens. And if I love them, brilliant, I can go on and I can get a qualification that's equivalent to an A-level and go on and go to university or go into employment or go into an apprenticeship. And if I don't, there's a safe off-ramp. I can take a qualification, but I can move on to something else. And I think that's the problem, is that with T-levels, we're kind of saying, well, that's your choice and good luck. And if you decide to bail out, then not only do you leave with nothing, but actually it's also a hit for the college or for the school in terms of retention, in terms of completion. But also at that point, they've got nothing else to take away. It's everything is gone. They haven't got a qualification they can continue with while they change direction on the other side. So I think that's really difficult. And, you know, where we're heading to with the new AAQs is not necessarily going to be any better an option. Potentially, it will be a more mixed program of study, but whether it's going to make things easier for those learners, I don't know.
So would you just tell us what AAQ stands for there, please?
So these are the new advanced applied qualifications that are kind of gonna come in, and I mean, awarding organizations are getting on with this. There are plenty that are coming through and will be hitting the ground running from 2025. So, you know, lots of colleges now will be planning to deliver these. And also, you know, it should, again, you know, because I think it's really important that we kind of acknowledge where things might actually be working well. I think there's some really exciting new qualifications coming through with that as well. So, you know, there'll be lots of people who are very disappointed about criminology maybe vanishing. Of course, this all depends on whether things get delayed in the next year or so. But if we assume everything continues as it does, there's lots of people who'll be very disappointed about criminology going. But being developed is policing in the criminal justice system. And actually, maybe that will be a really great new qualification, which will give some real focus to that journey. You've got one sustainability one, which is being developed by one of the awarding organisations, which again, that's kind of really current. Loads and loads of employers now have a person or a role or a team that's looking at sustainability as part of their operations approach. So that's great. And that's going to give young people the opportunity to train in something that matters. We've got there's a mental health and wellbeing one. So yes, applied psychology is probably going because it overlaps with psychology. But mental health and wellbeing as a qualification feels like that's very current at the moment and could apply to learners and be really of interest to learners. So, you know, these are going to be, you know, tough, rigorous qualifications that have been redesigned so they don't overlap with A levels and T levels. And again, you know, if you were really honest with yourself from an educational point of view, you can see why an approach might be, why have we got qualifications that are overlapping if they all have parity? If they all have equal value from comparably equal value from a UCAS point, do we need overlapping qualifications? Is a view that would be interesting to kind of explore, because that's what we've got at the moment, and you know, it works really well. But
that would be my next question, really. So if you've got candidates that are applying for the same jobs with similar employers, someone's got, you know, their three A levels, someone's got a T level in something that may overlap or, you know, similar kind of qualification. Do the employers know what that means and how to make a decision? Or, you know, even in an application, if they saw T levels, are they going to recognize the value of that and understand how that compares to an A level? And I know a lot has been done in the education sector, but is it also happening in the employment sector with the small employers and organisations as well as medium ones? Maybe it's happening with the big ones, but is it filtering down to everyone, do you think?
I mean, that's interesting. And I think it probably depends on your local area. So how colleges and schools in your local area have started to communicate that out, and also how open you are to the kind of the marketing and the materials being pushed out centrally from the DfE. I mean, obviously, you know, DfE would say, well, we included 250 employers when we worked with the awarding organisations and we developed these. So they would say there are 250, often very large, national companies out there who are really aware of T levels and should be promoting them with their companies and their employers and their staff. And then I think if you've got colleges that have been trailblazers, if they've been in wave one and wave two, probably employers in their local area, particularly the ones they work well with already, will be aware of them and will be open to the need for them to be involved in T-level delivery. So the need for them to be involved in co-design and co-delivery and also providing those placements. I suppose the challenge is that there's a whole cohort of employers that don't fit into either of those right now. And therefore, when a student turns up with the T-level, it is just going to be a bit of an unknown. So, you know, that is the case. But then you could argue that's been the case any time a new qualification has been introduced. You know, there's a time of take up that kind of, you know, we need to go through that process. And if we think it's worth it, it's worth it. And I guess, you know, you could then say, well, you know, and lots of numbers are bandied around, but the thousands of different qualifications that are available that aren't A levels or T levels, how do they navigate those at the moment? And actually, generally, they accept that if they're a level three and therefore have parity, that must mean that learner has that underlying foundation of knowledge if they need that. So I guess there is a big gap. And I know that that's something that, you know, is going to be hard in terms of scale up, because obviously one of the big things with T-levels is the work placement. And I think I think the numbers are something like they reckon they're going to need 250,000 placements if we get to the number of T-level enrolments that they're kind of talking about. So
Is that realistic? Is that realistic? I mean, I've got to be honest, you know, some of the places I've worked and visited, you know, the quiet, remote, rural areas, if they're planning to remove all of their BTEC provision and replace it with T-levels, are they going to find the number of placements that they need to serve the students in that area?
I think it's going to be really hard. And I think, you know, if you look at some of the other research and some of the other work that's going on out there. So, you know, there is a campaign that's going on that's supported by lots of colleges and is the Protect Student Choice campaign. They would say their findings show that basically employers are if anything becoming less keen to do placements. You know, actually the proportion of employers when asked that were interested in taking on placements has dropped slightly since T-levels first launched. And they would also question whether the number of students that are going to come off of applied general qualifications to do T-levels potentially means that it isn't sustainable, potentially at the quality of placement that we want. But if it could be made to work, it would be amazing. I mean, I don't know how, you know, there's one of the bits of feedback from the government select committee review was that there was a suggestion that T-levels were kind of city centric qualifications. So they could work really well in large conurbations with enough employers to provide enough good quality placements. Yes. But we're a rural college and we make it work, but we make it work for the right number of students in the right T levels. And I guess that's the balance. And I don't know, you know, whether that scoping exercise has been done across the whole country to say, well, what, you know, if we think about where T levels would work sensibly and we think about employers in rural areas, you know, we see this number, but is that deliverable with the number of kind of rural and slightly more isolated post 16 providers that we have, or are city six forms and city FEs and city schools with six forms going to have to do a huge amount of the heavy lifting with the numbers for T levels?
I think I discussed a similar kind of topic with in one of my previous shows, where are we then kind of going into a supply demand kind of offer with the courses, where colleges will be forced to only offer T levels that they can then secure employers for. So if they're in a industrial environment, or if they've got access to employers in this certain sector, then they're the courses they can provide. Whereas previously they might have, you know, stretched the provision and ambitions for their students to say, you know, you could study this at level three and then go away and get a job somewhere, you know, somewhere else. And necessarily, are we clipping some wings here of our students because they're not having as much opportunity to try things that are beyond that local area? And I'm not sure if we've moved any closer to finding an answer to that. And just over to you to tell me.
No, it's not really the show. I mean, I guess to be, you know, as a college that's kind of really embraced the concept of T-levels, we have thought about, you know, where do we have placements locally? You know, there's no point in us offering T-levels where we can't provide. And the ESFA was very clear and is very clear funding wise, you know, don't put on a T level that you can't secure placements for, because placement is a critical component of the T level qualifications. So actually, if you go back to kind of our core purpose, are we putting on qualifications that help prepare young people for progression in the workplace, and with a focus on the areas locally where there's sector growth and where there are opportunities, as well as on wider national areas of growth like AI or, you know, renewable energy. So I think it's almost worth turning that around and going, well, would we put on a qualification that didn't have any sensible progression routes for our learners, where we couldn't actually deliver all of the content because we didn't have the right teachers or the right facilities to do it? Well, we probably wouldn't, actually. So if we know T-levels have a high quality work placement, if we know it needs to be in a particular bit of the sector and doing a particular thing, and we look around and we don't think we have those, then we probably should think carefully about whether we want to offer them. Whether with the shrinking offer in the middle, that then means that a consequence is that we reduce that chance to try things. I think that's probably goes without saying. I mean, if we reduce student choice, if we reduce the scope that a study programme can look like, if we remove some of those qualifications that sit there at the moment and do a really good job of giving young people the chance to try new things, then that is a natural consequence. But it's probably that's driving it, because there is a world where those stay in a slightly different structure to what the DfE's probably propose now, and we retain A levels and we retain T levels and it all works quite well. But at the moment it doesn't feel like that's going to be the outcome. And then we have the ghost of the Advanced British Standard hovering.
I was going to go on to that later, but you beat me to it. So what do you think is going to happen there? I mean, if you had to bet on it, what would you say is going to come our way?
This is one of those where you sort of just, you know, you say, I'm going to stay silent on that. I think one of the interesting things about the education system in England is that we have a very politicised education system, and that is just where we find ourselves, and therefore you have to live in that world. And it would be lovely if we had a centralised, non-election driven educational strategy that just did what was right, or what the people in the heart of it felt was right for learners, and then carried through that plan over a period of time. But we don't, and so that means that we have to allow the winds of change to blow us in all sorts of different directions. And people, I like to believe that people don't just come up with stuff because they've kind of just suddenly decided it's a good idea. Like, I hope that there's thought and there's discussion and there's conversation before these ideas get to us. So I like to imagine that the idea of the Advanced British Standard comes from a place where someone has gone, how do we pull this very complex picture together? You know, we've ended up with what you could say were kind of, you know, chunked routes that don't seem to fit together. And they've gone, well, how can we reconcile that? How can we take a T-level that maybe doesn't quite work as we want it to, and combine it with A-levels which work really well, and get something even better? That's what I'd like to believe, Sabrina.
Well, you know, you're a man of dreams, aren't you?
I am. That many people have said that. But it's so far away as well. And I think, you know,
A lot can happen.
I think if it's an approach that says, let's take the best of everything and work with the education sector, work with people who know how young people most of the time function, and understand the consequences of doing, I think then it's got some hope.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
Right, we're back. Thank you for rejoining us after the news there. So we are talking about the Hope. We kind of talked about the Advanced British Standard and what might be coming. Just to summarise, we've also talked about the kind of the employer's side of the T levels, how it compares and the parity it has with the A levels. And I'm going to ask questions about the students. What are they saying? How are they finding it? You know, you've been very privileged, Simon, to have a couple of waves through. Have you got some success stories you can share and some good news of some of the outcomes from these T-level students?
Yeah, and that's a good question of hope to continue with. I mean, I think it's interesting. So when you look at some of the reports, some of the reviews that have been done around T-levels, I think what's really interesting is that there is evidence that's been provided to those committees that actually there are good things about T-levels. You know, teachers are seeing that they are qualifications that have got some purpose. They're seeing that they actually do provide a really good foundation and a really good opportunity for learners to apply that knowledge in the workplace. And they're seeing that those workplaces can be really, really valuable experiences for learners as well, where they get to thread together their learning with what happens in that setting. So I kind of think that's actually been a really good thing to see. Colleges and schools are saying, look, T-levels can work. And we've seen that. So, you know, teachers at the college have, you know, really enjoyed teaching some of that material, which is really current and really applicable and really gets the learners doing tasks and activities that are what they would be doing if they had those roles. It's been great to work with employers more closely and in a more constructive way with a framework that says, look, we need to do co-design, we need to do co-delivery. There are bits of this that
holding them kind of to account as well, for the curriculum and making them, you know, you tell us what you want.
Exactly, because that's often, as we all know, all of us who work at this bit of the transition, you know, we regularly get that challenge. Well, learners aren't ready for the workplace. Mm-hmm. And so actually saying to employers, okay, well, come in and work with us on a qualification that's completely tied to your sector and tell us how we can work with you to deliver that bit and to enhance that bit and to make it really relevant to our local context as well. I think that's been really powerful. And we, you know, we've talked about placements a little bit and, you know, it is a huge challenge. I mean, the numbers are kind of terrifying, really. You know, the projected numbers are that by 2026 there might be 150,000 students who won't have a suitable study program because of the changes.
Why is that? Sorry, if I could interject. So is that because of the progression from level two and the kind of qualified out because they lack maybe the maths and English or anything like that?
Protect Student Choice, which does a lot of kind of analysis of the data around some of this. So they would say that number of students are currently enrolled on an AGQ that will have been scrapped by September 2026. And if T-level growth is linear rather than exponential, which the DfE in their working suggests, there will just be a gap. There won't be enough T-levels. Those learners won't necessarily be right for T-levels, and there won't be a suitable alternative applied qualification. So we've kind of got this gap. If we don't do something, if that is the destination, we kind of need to get placement numbers up, we need to get T-level numbers up, we need to make sure that middle ground, whatever that looks like, is suitable for those learners. So that's kind of a big challenge. And we need employers to be there with us. And so we've for placements, have got more placements than we need for our learners because our local employers have been brilliant. We've got an amazing futures team, which is our careers team. And they've done lots and lots of work on the ground before the T-levels start to get those placements in place. And then they've been really successful. So then other employers hear about that and then they want in. Okay. And I think that's really critical. We talked about employers earlier. it is a big risk, because we're saying, well, we need you to take a learner. Usually there is, you know, there's a block placement model and there's a day a week or 2 day a week model. A lot of RT levels, just because of the nature of them, tend to be block placements. So you're saying to an employer, take this person for 4 weeks, give them a project, give them a significant involvement in something that is actually doing a job, and fingers crossed. And so that's a big risk for an employer. But when it works and then other employers hear about that, that's really powerful. And that's where we see the value of working with employers, and also the value of success in new qualifications. So we've got, you know, our counting T-level students, we've got several of them in the second year have already got jobs lined up for September with the employers that they were placed with. And that's because they're great students, but also because they could do things that already is going to mean they can jump across certain aspects of the AAT. So by doing the T-level in accounting, they already are ahead on the AAT. And that recognition of prior learning means for the accountancy firms, they've had sight of them, they know they fit in the team, they've seen them deliver, they know they've got the professional skills and the professional behaviours that T-levels are all about developing. And that learner now is all about, I want the best grade I can get, I want to then go in September, and I'm my career is starting now. That's really powerful, and that's where T-levels do their work. That is, if they all did that and we had enough of them and they were well suited to all learners, that would be great. But you're still going to have this group in the middle where to get to that point is not necessarily going to be the best thing for them. It's not, you know, they don't have the choice and that range of choice that probably we should have in the education system.
So for those students in the middle, are there some plans to kind of address that middle ground, and, you know, what kind of direction, or what are we looking at, and timescales, really? Is there a timescale to kind of get these kids what they need?
So I would say, I suppose the government would say, yes, there is. They would say they'd say a variety of things. They'd say that there's a need for reform. So they'd say that the current applied qualification landscape isn't rigorous enough, doesn't allow for progression, doesn't allow for successful outcomes, and that the move to T-levels, A-levels, and this select offer in the middle is really important in doing that. They would also say that the T-level is the gold, you know, is the gold standard. The way they talk about it is, this is what we want young people to be doing if they're going to go into industry. And they would say that it needs that. I would imagine they would say that it needs that rapid change because the problem is pressing, and they think that they don't want to hang around. They want that to kind of happen. But their plan is basically, when you boil it down, if we scrap BTECs, people will have to do T-levels. That's effectively the approach they're taking. Yes, there is a bit of carrot there. Here's a great qualification, work placement. There's funding for, you know, specialist equipment allocation, and there's a bit of capital funding. They've spent about £1 billion on T-levels.
Wow.
So far, more to spend. More to spend. I think it's just under £1 billion, and there's like another £100 million or so coming. Okay. So, you know, they see them as what people should be doing. But that's the approach, is that we take this away and therefore students will do that, they'll have to do that. Whether that is a sensible approach to growing the market,
I'm going to argue no. And that's only because I am looking out my window and I can see some of my students right now, and I would say that they would not be able to progress into a T-level come September if they were to. And that is with all the support and all the funding and all the kind of knowledge and understanding. Some students cannot, do not possess that resilience, the academic rigor to work through an A-level or a T-level. And obviously the it's a bit unknown in terms of the other qualifications that are supposed to be coming. So I look at them and I wonder, you know, are we doing them a disservice? I agree. I think the T-levels is a brilliant concept and it works for those that it works for. But I do think there's a group and a category of student that's just kind of been not forgotten, but left behind.
Yeah.
I'm a bit concerned for colleges like, you know, general further education that have a very vocational background, that have those students that aren't as academically driven and haven't got those GCSE grades. Where does it leave them?
I think we can probably say that T-levels are a good addition to the landscape. Okay, that, you know, they need work and they need refining, and there's some bits which would definitely make them better. But as a concept and an idea, and for a focused group of learners, okay, and we could sort of put that to one side. Really, the challenge is the government sees them as a very big part of the provision, and I think that's the problem, because as you say, these are not going to be the right qualifications for everybody, and lots of other people agree with that view. I mean, like I said, you've got Protecting Student Choice and that campaign, which really does kind of pull together a lot of the conflicting information around this, both in terms of the way that the government presents it and also the reality of kind of some of those challenges. But even the House of Commons Education Committee in April 2023, they published their report on the future of post 16 qualifications. And they were pretty scathing about the introduction of T-levels and the whole new approach to AGQs. And I think that one of the quotes from the committee chair, Robin Walker, was the planned withdrawal of AGQs will constrict student choice and could deepen the skill shortages that these reforms are meant to fix. And that summarizes absolutely exactly what you just said. And that committee heard evidence from lots and lots of different people, colleges, employers, the government, everybody. And the suggestion is we should just slow this down. We should make sure that this is the right thing, and we should think about what we're doing. Not that there shouldn't be change, but it should be done in a way which is considered and doesn't just suddenly create this cliff edge where 150,000 learners who could be being successful on those AGQs suddenly can't be, because they haven't really got any sensible alternatives. And of course, this is also, as we said, going to disadvantage the most disadvantaged young people. So it was DfE's own Equalities Impact Assessment said that.
Wow.
And if you ignore your own Equalities Impact Assessment, you sort of wonder what the point of doing it in the first place is. So the quote from that was, those from SEND backgrounds, Asian ethnic groups, disadvantaged backgrounds and MALs are disproportionately likely to be affected.
Wow. Huge category.
basically everybody.
Everyone.
So that's really worrying. And obviously part of the challenge is the model of delivery for these new applied qualifications as well. So this idea that you won't be able to just do those, they will be part of a bigger program of study. And as you and I both know, that's, you know, so these learners, and it's, I think one of the real challenges with this is we see there's parity of level 3 qualifications. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think there is a real truth underneath this, that the old style BTECs were probably not fit for purpose.
They've lost their way a bit. They've been diluted, I think, as years gone by. And I would agree there are some that should have been taken off the shelf a while ago. And there were too many in that regard. I do agree with that.
Yeah. And so the associated problem with this is lots of the DfE's assessment, impact assessment, is based on those outcomes. So it doesn't actually look at those new reformed BTECs as routes. So a lot of, and actually, do you know what? If you were looking at that and you were looking at the impact and the value of those, you could quite rightly say these are not fit for purpose. But I think the new BTECs, I mean, you only have to look at national benchmarks for new style BTECs versus the old coursework, 100% coursework ones. And, you know, the numbers are noticeably down nationally. So, but these are the same learners. This is not, you know, okay, and maybe that's as it should be. Maybe these should be a bit more rigorous. So the challenge going back to it is, so we're saying level three qualifications have parity, but then we're also kind of saying, but not all learners are right for A levels. So we're not really saying it's because they can't do amazing things. It's just that style of qualification doesn't work for them for a whole variety of reasons. And mm-hmm. one might argue that A levels are not very representative of the world that you go on and work in. So maybe we'd rather have people who could do well in other types of qualifications. But that is an in for some people who want to argue against what we're trying to say. We're saying, well, if they can't do A levels, you know, what are you saying? That BTECs are easier? And we know that that's not the case. Mm. But it gives that, it allows this little chink that I think allows whoever to make an argument that says, therefore, we need to reform them because why can't they do A levels or T levels? All these brand new, very, very difficult ones. And therefore, as part of their program of study, they should be able to have an A level on there, because if they're capable of doing a level three qualification and they have parity and UCAS points have an equivalence across the system, they should be able to do that. And we know, as you said, you look out of your window, I walk down the corridor and I can see learners who are thriving doing applied psychology, applied law and criminology, and will go on and will study a degree, or they'll go and they'll do an apprenticeship in something else and they'll be brilliant and they'll have taken those qualifications and just got so much from them. And I don't know what they're going to do in the future. I don't know what those learners are going to do if the landscape looks like the direction of travel at the moment, which is exactly why we need to keep beating the drum about, let's just slow this down and look more closely at the actual evidence as it is, not what was a few years ago, not what we just hope will happen, but what is actually happening.
I think that, and I like the phrase, and I like the way you coined that, you know, slow it down, because there is a lot of fast-paced stuff happening, a lot of training, a lot of CPD, a lot of recruitment happening just to fulfill this need. You know, we've got lecturers working day in, day out, creating resources for programs that are brand new to them. We're trying to staff with subject specialists, which again is organizationally is very, very difficult and challenging, let alone, you know, trying to market before we've even got a cohort running. So we don't really know what we're selling. We're selling a T level, but don't fully know the curriculum. We don't know the sequence. It's selling a dream, really, isn't it? And hoping that it will stick hard enough onto something so we have a cohort to run it. It is very fast, and if we did slow it down, I think it would allow for that reflection and I think more importantly that discussion and that dialogue. And really I think from my experience, that's all we're wanting that opportunity and a bit more space to kind of say, this is what we're finding. Could we come up with some ideas or solutions or alternatives to remedy this? Because it is heartbreaking when you see students that are coming in, especially in kind of general FE, they're coming in entry level, they go to level one, they go to level two, and you can see how much they've developed and how much they grow, and then, you know, necessarily that's where the journey is going to end for them, or, you know, what's next, we can't tell you, and those discussions are really hard. So it's just, I love the way you said that, you know, let's just slow it down, and I think that's a really valid point.
And I think part of that is also, you know, we've not seen yet really a real evaluation of T levels. Because there hasn't been time, you know, so the numbers doing T levels are growing, and I guess one of the, you know, as a scientist, there's, you know, I always like the line, which is statistics are like a lamppost to a drunken person. They're more for support than illumination. And I think that's the problem with statistics in this debate, in this discussion, in this argument. I think the government for whatever reason. And again, you know, I like to see the best in people, Sabrina. That's I just think life's better when you start from that position. So I'm imagining that, you know, civil servants were given the task of reviewing BTECs and saying what's going on with them. And of course, New Start BTECs, really, they kind of hit the ground just before COVID.
Yeah, I don't think they were given a chance, I don't think.
No, and equally, there wasn't really any data. If you think about the timeline of development of T-levels, if they were being developed in the sort of, you know, 2016 to 2019,
right,
the data they were going to use to justify that was old style, 100% coursework, BTECs and applied, and the 10,000 qualifications that were out there in the, you know, that number that's always quoted. So actually then the ball is in motion, then it's happening. So if they suddenly 3 years later went, oh, hang on, we've got some outcomes now post-COVID in our first year where we're still boosting the boundaries anyway, but we think we might have been maybe a bit wrong about the underlying data, that's not a great look for a government and probably not for the civil servants in the DfE. You know, you've got to commit to it if you're going to put that much money into it. So I think that bit of it, I kind of, okay, it's in motion. They're in, it's an interesting qualification. Lots of people said it's good, you know. But of course, what we should then do before we then do the bit in the middle is say, now let's let T-levels bed in. Let's see how they go. You know, 91% or something passed the T-level last year.
Is it across the board? Because I know in wave one, there were a few hiccups and, you know, achievement was quite mixed in certain courses and certain programs. Has that now been remedied, and are we now getting the kind of achievement that we're wanting to see from our students, and are they staying? What's the retention like? Are they lasting the 2 years?
I'm trying not to be biased in anyone. I'm trying to provide an open argument, but retention will come to outcomes wise. So pass rate dropped slightly last year, I believe, if I remember rightly, by like a percent. So pass rate in the first year was actually pretty good. It was above 90. If you dive under that and you look at the mark boundaries, then that, as always, is slightly more telling. And I'll let listeners go and do that at their own leisure. Okay. Because you know, and there's even a line, you know, it has been clearly stated that T-levels as a new qualification will have advantageous boundaries in the first couple of years while they bed in.
Okay.
And if that's blanket for new qualifications, then that's fine. So we might imagine even the pass rates to go down again after this year. So we're talking like 90-odd% pass rate. I think last year, I'm sure one of my colleagues from the ETF, who we do a lot of training with, will correct me by email at some point. But I think it was about 14 distinctions. The number of distinctions across the whole cohort is about 3,500, I think, T-level learners completed. So the proportion of distinctions is incredibly low. And
why is that?
Because they're really hard.
But yeah, but then are you more likely to get three grade A's in A-level?
But then you'd have to think about the learner cohort, and of course at that point you could argue that was still a bit uncertain. Colleges weren't quite sure who was going to be successful on the T level and quite where entry criteria would be. I mean, most entry criteria for T levels have got fives or a mix of fives and fours even. So
I think some of them are harder to get into than A levels. In a lot of cases, and you're still seeing that level of distinction is quite,
it's low, and they have adapted some of the overall grade calculations to allow for slightly more options around that distinction, because of course it's a combination of the core and the occupational specialism. So finding the right balance of those is going to take time, as well as a new qualification. So you know, so those numbers are kind of going up in terms of the number of entries, and I think we'll see more of a normal distribution. Well, one side of a normal distribution, because of course applieds don't work quite like A levels. So I think we'll see that tail growing a little bit and the numbers going up. I think retention wise that's really interesting. So it was about 66% last year for T levels.
Okay, and what was the main reason people came off?
a variety, I would imagine. I mean, we our attention is much better than that. And I think there's a big bit around IAG. I think as you deliver them more, you become better at working with learners to make sure they're right for them at the start. We still offer ASs. This is part of our experience, is for learners. So 84-85% of our learners come from Polar 1 or 2. So incredibly disadvantaged, as we talked about earlier, you know, real kind of unsettled start to their education career, and need that opportunity to have some flex and some responsiveness in their experience. And so working with them to make sure they're on a program that suits them is really critical. But we think ASs are still part of that, even for A-level learners, so that they've got a safe off-ramp if they need it. So I think that's probably part of it. Like, getting the right learners on is just tricky when it's a new qualification. So learners then, yes, they get past ILR, but whether it's 6 months or 9 months or 12 or 14 months, at a point, they just realise they're not on the right thing for them. There's also the challenge. They are incredibly hard, which is not to say that AGQs aren't, but then they've got a mixed program, so they've got balance. Okay, so I'm struggling with this and I'm finding this hard and I'm having to get extra support and my teachers are working with me, but I'm flying in this one because it just works for me in a different way. So there's a difference there. You know, maybe you've got the emotional energy to try with that one, whereas when it's a T level and it's every single lesson you have is just hard and not working for you. It's understandably, it's lower activation energy to walk away from it. Then you got the placements. You know, some students try those and then realize that it's not for them. And some students try the placements and realize that the sector's for them, but maybe not the qualification, and have an offer to go into an apprenticeship, or decide, I just want to go and work in that sector now because I love it.
Yeah, so we've had a lot of that, because we've had employers steal our students. You know, so year one, they go and do the placement, the employers offer them jobs because they need them now, and students will happily jump ship to get an income over another year of being on a T-level.
And you can't really blame them, you know, and also, like, the employers, it's a hard market at the moment, you know, finding good people and getting the right ones in and getting them at a stage where you can shape them and grow them and turn them into the workers that you want. It would be very hard not to be tempted. We've done a lot of work around that, and our employers are great, and we're very, very lucky, and our futures team work with them to find the right employer for the student. So there's a match, and we're really clear about, look, finishing this is right for you as a learner. And our employers, fortunately, reinforce that. It's like, we want you to come to us with this. I mean, accounting is a great example. If you complete this, you don't have to do these bits of the AAT. You can jump ahead. You're not out so much, you're not stressing so much, you can already do useful things for us. So it's to their benefit and to the employer's benefit for them to finish it. So I think that's a key part of how we reduce that retention. But, you know, if we had courses in our settings and, you know, your team leader was coming to you and saying, I'm expecting 66% retention on this course, you'd be like, what is going on? So that's interesting. So 66% retention nationally, and obviously, as I said, ours is much better than that, so there will be
some much worse,
but that's across 3,500 learners. So again, you know, these learners have taken, you know, a real leap of faith embarking on a new qualification, and for some it's worked amazingly. And for some, it's been much, much tougher. But I think it, you know, and that's a real example of where, if you're on one program and it's not working, that potentially is your trajectory towards successful employment and a fulfilling life just knocked off track for years. Whereas if you've got student choice, if you've got that mixed program, if you've got the ability to do qualifications that work for you, that are suited to you, that you feel engaged with, that allow you to fail and not do well in one of them and still feel like you've got a route, like that kind of then suddenly shows you why that's so important, and why slowing down that culling and that approach to how that program study is going to look is what other people are saying, and what I think is probably the right approach, which is, look, we're not no one's saying don't do it. We're just saying, look, don't use data that isn't right or that isn't any longer appropriate to the place we're in. Use information that's current, listen to the industry, talk to the sector, and understand what we can do that could work really well for learners where the T level and the A level aren't right choices.
I think that's really, really sound and wise advice from you there, Simon. And thank you so much for all of your wisdom and knowledge. We are going to start to summarise because we are running out of time. If there was another kind of 30 seconds for you to say whatever you'd like to say about the T levels or the A levels or the middle ground, now's the time.
Wow, that's a big final ask. I guess I go back to that idea that my sense and the sense I get from colleagues and the wider sector is we need to understand the changes we're making. The evidence that we're basing those changes on needs to be rigorous and reliable and appropriate to now. And we need to make sure that when we're introducing significant changes, we do it in a scaffolded, structured, sensible way that allows us to evaluate as we go. And ultimately, with all of that, places the learner at the heart of it and make sure that what we're doing is creating an educational qualification ecosystem that makes sure that every learner has a route that means they can go from that place where they are before they join the post 16 world to their next step successfully and become part of society in a way that gives them joy and pleasure and a life that will be fulfilled and contribute to society.
Well, you did very well there, filling those 30 seconds. Inspirational. Loved it. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, listeners. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today. Really informative. You can find Dr. Fox, Dr. Simon Fox, on LinkedIn if you've got any further questions. I'm sure you're happy to answer anything, aren't you?
Almost anything
relevant to the topic. Tune in next time. Thank you all.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.